And we would like to, the gals realize, you know, okay, so what does political clout really, the value of it, and that we should get women in positions where they could be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could, and that they could vote, you know, to reflect our feelings. Okay? So they're pretty sharp.
Now, do they use this as a forum to talk about their problems specifically as women and how they were being discriminated against?
Correct. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, women, see, the thing is that just one woman out there by herself in the shop, and she did, just to talk to a man or something like that, she, you know, they didn't feel free. Mm-hmm. And when you get a group of women together, then you get, if it's just two women, if you've got a gal beside you, she's your buddy, she's going to support you, you feel stronger and you feel freer about expressing your problems.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get a big group together, then they were very open.
Mm-hmm. So this was kind of early to
the beginning. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You bet.
But at the same time, the politicians saw it as...
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Now, within the Women's Council then, were the two caucuses... Did you have the same
caucus? Oh, there were three caucuses. There were three established caucuses,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And there's always got some others doing all the time, you know, that want to take over. But there were three established caucuses at that time.
Which were those?
Well, there was the Hatchet Gang, and then there was the caucus that I belonged to, of course, and the Black Caucus.
And was the Black Caucus also represented in the Women's Council?
Oh, yes.
So there were Black women in the Council?
Oh, yes.
In the council.
And Latin.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
And what kind of relationships did the women have with each other? Was there loyalty to their caucus or to each other?
To each other.
Uh-huh.
To each other. But see, they were learning. It was an educational process like I had gone through, okay? And, you know, I learned that, okay, just because you're elected to something or appointed to something isn't because you're so damn smart or whatever. It's because they don't want to do the job themselves. It's a dirty job, or they really do need you desperately, or they want some legwork done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once in a while, it's because they realize you didn't have the ability, but very, very seldom. But I figured this way, okay, so just give me a crack at it, buddy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it takes to get there, we're going to get there.
Now, were there any racial prejudice between the women?
No, we didn't have any problem that way at all. In fact, I found that it brought the women closer together and found some very good relationships.
Mm. Now, what was your own role in the caucus? It sounds like you weren't at that point.
No, I wasn't really active in it because I had, you know, I was involved in other committees, but I was supportive of it,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Although the one thing that I was concerned about, that I didn't want the girls to go off on a deep track is, you know, deep end, is I didn't want them to come along and say, well, I'm the chairman of the Women's Caucus and I represent the women only. Because it took me so many years to be able to have them accept me as a woman. And when I would go out there and I would speak to the people, it wasn't that I'm just representing the women. I'm representing Local 148, not just the women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I didn't want to have to lose all those years of work. So I had a real rough time with this one gal. She's a fantastic gal and a real fighter, a real organizer, but she would keep saying, I'm representing the women. And sure she was, you bet. But it would turn all the men off. And, you know, and I was afraid that we were going to go down the tube.
Mm.
And because Women's Caucus, it became politically powerful for a while, and then it went dormant.
Mm. When was that?
Well,
how long would you say that it stayed politically powerful?
Hmm?
How long would you say it stayed politically powerful?
Oh, about 5-6 years, maybe, something like that.
So
yeah.
Early
60s. Uh-huh, right, uh-huh. And then it became dormant. Because some of the women that I think that a couple of them that got in there, like this one Ruth Sullivan, you know, that
mm-hmm.
she destroyed a lot of... the gals got to the point where they said, I'm sick and tired of this bickering amongst, you know, they didn't handle it properly. It could have been salvaged, and it's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when, you know, last year, you know, when Gail Powell was deciding, I was so thrilled. I said, how great, because here they have the Midas stand and a beautiful hall and everything, how wonderful. And it went down the tube.
Well,
that's a shame.
Tell me how, during the period of those 5 years, did the nature of the group change in terms of what they did?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
How did that
happen? Well, they would be attending more membership meetings and that sort of thing, you know, and they would bring issues up on the floor with to the membership. If a gal was having a problem out in the shop and didn't feel like her steward was handling it properly, you know, she had support from these other gals, and she'd be out there on the floor, and she would discuss it, you know, and and it they became much more active, and, you know, and while in the shop would went into office and that sort of thing, it did. And it did help. It did help get women in there, become active. Mm-hmm. But then it disillusioned a lot of them, turned a lot of them off, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, it sounds like what happened was that the internal political differences in the union started to be reflected in the women's council.
Very definitely, very definitely.
Can you tell me how that came about and how that was expressed?
Well, it came about, believe it or not, first of all, the males wanted to utilize the gals, you know, and get their help in there. Well, and at first the girls, you know, they were sincere and everything else. They wanted to go out and work, but after a while, when they saw that they were being used, you know, and not being run for any of these high offices, a lot of them were disillusioned, and so they were turned off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they just they wouldn't participate anymore after that.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's how that happened. Now, however, there were a few that realized that, hey, this is the type of action I like, and I'm ready to take them on. They're not going to turn me off. And they pursued it, and they kept running for higher offices,
mm-hmm.
such as Anna Faye did, and she was elected to the voting committee.
So it really was a kind of training ground.
Yes, it was.
And, support group for women.
It was training ground. It you know, the women found out how they could organize and how they could get support, but they also found out that you just don't get it from women alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to represent all the people.
Mm-hmm.
See, it was.
Now, tell me about this women's conference and what happened there that led to that hearing and the target.
All right. Now, we had a pretty good-sized group of women there. You know, women's rep. But the international, see, was starting to step in, and they wanted to use the women's consul, you know, they wanted to control it. Well, at that point, the Hatchet Gang, you see, was in, you know, and that year, the Hatchet Gang was in control that year, if I remember correctly, anyway. So the women's conference, the women's council was pretty tight-knit, and they were learning how to use their clout, okay? So when it came to the conference up there, the international, you know, what they can do, they appoint select people from each council as representative from the local union.
Now, this conference was what exactly?
This is a conference where all local union women all get together, you know, and they were just starting to form this women's committee, UAW it was,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they get the women together, each local. And they elect officers from there to be on the executive board of the state and all that sort of thing, okay? So, but the international at that time had the prerogative to select one person from each woman's committee to set up on the speaker's platform as a representative of the local union. Well, the international and we were not getting along too well then, so what do? They select this gal who was not even part of our group, and put her up there. And we didn't know. We didn't know that till we got there. And here we look up there, and here's this gal sitting up there who wasn't even part of the council, you know what I mean? And so I told the girls, I said, well, now this is something else. Boy, a slap in the face, you know, and those girls said, well, Betty, we're not going to stay. We're not going to stand for that. And we certainly aren't. I said, very quietly, girls, when they introduced her as representative local union, we just all get up and walk out. That's why we show our displeasure. And that's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did, exactly.
And now, how many of you were at the conference?
Golly, I'm trying to think. Gee, must have been 25, 30.
Uh-huh.
It was a good-sized group, you know.
And how many of the group walked out?
Everyone. Uh-huh. Every one of them. They were irate about it.
Now, when you said before that at that point you and the international weren't getting along too well, what were the points of differences?
I can't recall at that particular time. I can't recall.
Uh-huh.
But, you see, by this time, they also had enough education to realize that look, just because of international union, if they do something you don't agree with, you can get them to say so.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go along with every darn thing that they come up with. And if you don't think it's good for your local, then you can say so. You don't have to take it. You know?
So at that point, the international was trying to organize the women's committee.
Well, they were trying to organize the women's committee, but they were also trying to get political control of the local, which they do, you know, which they try to do. And so they want to be able to say, okay, I control this local union over here, so that when the time comes for the convention delegates election, why, they get their delegates elected and, you know, they go to the convention, they get reelected, and that's how they keep their jobs, okay? See? Well, we were still unhappy, you know, with the things, the way things come out in the strike. We weren't totally happy about things. So we weren't going to totally control us if we could help it. And the only way you do that, if you don't like the job that they're doing, is see to it to get replaced, just like you do your congressmen and senators now. You just don't vote for them next time.
Mm-hmm.
See? This is what they learned. Mm-hmm. They taught us.
Now, were most of the women in your caucus then?
Oh, yes.
In the Women's Council?
Oh, yes.
So within the council that you had, they were the majority caucus.
Oh, yes. They were in the majority caucus. You bet.
And this Ruth Sullivan, who brought, when there was the hearing, you brought charges against her for spreading rumors about you being a communist.
No, she got up at the membership meeting and she said, you know, she made that statement at the membership meeting.
Now, what happened, as I understand from the hearing, since this was, just to get it on tape, was that the women walked out and lost from the conference.
Right.
While this other person was introduced.
Being introduced as a representative of the local, as representative of Leela Davy Local 148 Women's Council, and she wasn't even a member of it.
And was she in the Hatchigan Caucus?
No, yes, she was in the Hatchigan Caucus, right.
And then after she was introduced, you all came back into the room?
Well, we waited until, yes.
Uh-huh.
We came back.
And then the conference
continued.
And was there any, at what point did she start, this Ruth Sullivan, start making the charges?
Immediately afterwards.
At the conference itself?
No. At our membership. That, you know, I went back immediately after when we returned to our local union.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had to make a report on the conference and all that sort of thing, and I got up an article for the paper. She immediately started coming down.
She had also walked out.
Well, she didn't walk out. She was up there on the podium. She was up there on that long table, banquet table. She was the one selected by the International to represent a local union.
Uh-huh.
And she wasn't even on the women's committee. And she was sitting up there. You know how they had representatives from each local union sitting at this long table, see? So when she was introduced as Ruth Sullivan, a member of UAW Local 148 Women's Committee, and she wasn't even on the damn committee. Bad enough she didn't go to a caucus. But she wasn't even on the committee. And the girls were furious. Oh, they were angry. They wanted to go up there and take, I had to restrain them.
Now, it seemed that what happened is that the men started using the caucus battle, using the women in the caucus battle.
Sure, you bet.
Because this man...
The Hatchet Gang was using Ruth Sullivan. Oh, yes.
This man...
She was intelligent.
...referred to, what was his name? In the here, West?
Adam Webb.
Yes. Now, he was in the Hatchet Gang caucus.
Right.
Now, there were two names that were mentioned. My sense was, in reading the hearing, that this was a political issue not related to women's issues at all.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They wanted to quiet their opposition,
mm-hmm.
Period. That's right.
Now,
it just so happened that women were really out there doing the pushing.
Yeah. Now, tell me, it sounds like the conference was being run by men, though.
Well, true. That's right. The conference itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's before women really, they were really appointing women and, you know, and hiring them and that sort of thing. It's true.
And who was Banner?
Banner?
In the hearing, there's a reference to, I almost became a Banner man at that point.
Oh, that was a caucus.
Oh, it was called Banner?
Banner, right.
And which caucus was that?
I can't remember now which one was that. You don't recall who the man was, and then I'd know which one of them.
Well, then there was someone named Belioki who seemed to be running this conference that you all met with after the walkout.
I'd have to look at the transcript to refresh my memory.
Now, the reference, though, to I almost became a Banner man was in disgust at what was going on, in other words?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently, without my going back to the... yes, because obviously it would be. He must have gone to one caucus and he almost became a Banner man because then I made him unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't handle.
Now, tell me, in terms of the walkout, Betty, was there an attempt by the local women's committee to challenge the seating of the...
Oh, yes. I mean, at that time,
mm-hmm.
Physically, they wanted to go up there and get her off that stage. And I said, no, we can't do that. No. The only thing we can do to show our displeasure is just by leaving and coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we don't have to, I mean, it would be nice if you could just raise your hand and say, you know, Madam Chairman, or Mr. Chairman, you saw there's not a member of our caucus, and you know, and she doesn't represent us, because then they would say we selected her, and then it would be what kind of hassle would you have on the floor then? You couldn't resolve it. Mm-hmm. More of an impact is to get more of an impact to all of the delegates mm-hmm. who were there to realize that hey, Local 138's got a problem, or the international's got a problem, really. And that was the most effective way to do it at that time.
Now, what was the reaction of the other delegates at the conference?
Oh, later on they found out why we walked out. They were totally supportive.
Mm-hmm. But at the time, what happened?
They didn't know why we walked out. They were just in disbelief to see that many women, because we were the largest group there, mm-hmm. to get up and walk out. They couldn't understand why, you know. I was having a heck of a time keeping girls quiet. You know, just come on, let's go out and get up the room, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then was there an attempt by any of the leadership to appease any of you after you've walked out?
Oh, definitely. We had the director said he didn't know anything about it. He didn't know that this gal had been selected. Well, that's impossible because the director is the head of the political caucus of the region. He knew damn good and well.
What, the director of the conference?
Of the region. Oh. And that's the director of the UAW, of the Region 6.
And who was that at that time?
I'm trying to think. I think it was Bialetti, but I'm not sure.
Oh, that's the name that I did come across, yeah.
Okay, I think it was Bialetti. Yeah.
So right after at the conference itself, after your walkout, you had a discussion with them?
That night,
mm-hmm.
we did.
Mm-hmm. And what transpired in that?
Lisa, he didn't know that she was selected. He had nothing to do with it, so I knew better.
Mm-hmm.
But we just tried to handle it. We said, well, I think that perhaps anything that has to do with the Women's Council, you know, from here on out, that the chairman of that committee should be contacted, and, you know, should be any selection, anything to do with the council should be done with the chairman and the secretary and the whole council itself. And Mira and I suggest you do that.
And the point of this conference was to try to pull together all the women's councils from each local.
Mm-hmm.
And to do what?
Well, to resolve the women's problems and to set up programs for educational purposes and involvement in the city and state politics and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Now, when you say that it lasted just for a few years, was that true
our involvement.
Each local, or was that just in your
just
local?
Just our local.
Just in your
mm-hmm.
local. Other locals kept their councils.
Yes, uh-huh. But never, not a very big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Never was a very big thing of any of the local unions, really.
And what would you attribute its decline to in your own local?
I think the disenchantment of the way that they were being, the women were being utilized, you know, that really I do. Because, you see, the gals, a lot of the women, they didn't need that. They had a home and a job to take care of, you know, and, you know, unless you're a real labor-minded person, you say, the heck with it, I don't need that kind
mm-hmm.
of aggravation.
Mm-hmm.
Really. It's a shame. Even the social part, it fell apart. Because they didn't want to be exposed to all this bickering, you'd call it, you know, or all this lying, or look what they did. Here we had a big group, and what does the big international union do? They come and take a girl that doesn't even belong to our committee, and
mm-hmm.
she's up there, and she represents us, and she doesn't even, I don't even know her.
So almost from the beginning, it was doomed in terms of a lot of the internal problems.
That's the way it appeared to me.
Mm-hmm.
It sure did.
Now, Betty, can you talk a little bit about the sequence that after that and the charges that Ruth Sullivan made, just so that we can get it in the interview,
mm-hmm.
since it's on the mm-hmm. record there?
Well, the statement she made at the membership meeting was that when the Women's Council, when she was introduced, the Women's Council got up and walked out, and that was the tactics used by the communists.
Mm-hmm.
And so I challenged her on the floor. I said, now, wait a minute, are you saying that I'm a communist? And she said, well. So I said, well, you know, I said I can't remember the exact words, it's been so many years ago. But I said that as far as I'm concerned, you know, you're accusing me of being a communist, and I'm not. And so, therefore, you know, I'm requesting a trial be held. Because, boy, red-baiting a communist then is a kiss of death, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you forget your political career, let alone your private life. So I felt that it was necessary to have a trial, to clear my name.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did. They set up the trial committee. That's why this trial was held.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, once before it happened to me, you know, when the manager of industrial relations accused me of being
mm-hmm.
a communist, and I had to go down to the the government and say, hey,
the NLRB.
That's right, and had to register a complaint, because if you don't, silence is just an admission of your guilt sometimes, and it's a hard way to go, but boy, they put you in that position, and you've just got to fight it out. And I hated the idea of the local union having to spend money on it and everything else, and the time and everything else, and so it was just kind of a big joke. As a matter of record, it had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be done.
Now, there's been an attempt to mediate this before it came to the trial, though.
Well, not that I felt to, enough to that I felt that I could reconsider.
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, she made the statement, and it was at a membership meeting, and so many people there.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, that's pretty tough to put out the fire like that.
So it was not that she was willing to go back at a membership meeting and retract it. It's just that she'd
made the damage. Damage had been done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, well, yes, I think later on she was, I really feel she was very sorry she had, but she was being used too, don't
mm-hmm.
you know? So she was a pawn. She was being used.
Now, who was this Adam Webb who seemed to be so involved in all of that?
Well, he was active in the Hatchet Gang.
Mm-hmm.
And for quite a while, I mean, we were up working. He was chairman of the, well, he was active with the USO, and I know, but he was chairman of the Veterans Committee. And I mean, I was working with him, even though it didn't belong to the same caucus and everything else. I thought we were doing pretty good. But I think actually he was just working for his caucus, trying to break up our caucus.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're friends now. He was out working for him in the last election.
Mm-hmm.
He and his wife both passing out my slate. Oh, yes. Well, I can't say mutual respect because I didn't approve of their politics. I cannot have mutual respect mm-hmm. if I don't approve of the type of politics, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I can have mutual respect for somebody running against me. You bet. I have many, many a time.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go out to an election, I go out to win, okay? Yeah. But I don't play dirty politics. I will not.
Now tell me what happened after the trial. At the trial, among other things, you had all the witnesses come in, and then they played the tape, and it was hard to know from, they didn't repeat in the transcript what was on the tape.
All the things were on the tape, that's right.
Now what happened at the trial then?
Well, a lot of people got up, and I had people back me that were just absolutely furious, you know. And not politicians either. I mean, it was just people in the shop come up there, and they would just raise hell and say, how can you say that about Betty when she was in the strike and snap? And all that sort of thing. You know, I had a lot of people do that. And then also, this one gal that they actually went to the, she was in the hospital, and, you know, and took a lot of tape, you know, statements from her. And she had quite a vocabulary that perhaps maybe a sailor, real rough old sailor would have, but she was a good union gal, you know, but she was pretty rough and tough. So naturally, like, oh, that couldn't be in the transcript. She told him how it was. Well, she really did. And she said she's just sorry she couldn't be there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I mean, the language she used was pretty earthy.
And then what? Then they played the tape of the meeting back.
Yes,
there.
You see. And there, in those days, what we would have is every single membership meeting had to be recorded, and that was a mandate from the membership motion on the floor. To that effect, and so that and they had to be kept for a year, I think it was, and that sort of thing. But it also was an assist to the recording secretary. I always liked the idea myself, because it helped me later transcribe things I had missed, you know, especially counts and that sort of thing, you know, numbers and that sort of thing. It was an assist to me. But they played politics with those tapes too, you know.
Well, it sounds like first they couldn't find it, then they brought in the wrong one. And then once they played the
tape, that's just like the day that I couldn't get a ride to anybody. Everybody was gone, hurried out. And I had to go get my damn car, and I was too late to make my Monero report to the membership. See, oh, I play all kinds of politics that can to follow things up. Which is, I guess that's fair in politics. You just have to learn to outthink them. That's all.
Now, what was the outcome of the trial finally?
The outcome of the trial was they found that there was nothing to prove that I was a communist.
Mm-hmm.
That was the outcome of the trial. Good.
And that she had been spreading...
She had been spreading malicious rumors, that's right. She wasn't fined or slapped in the hand or anything like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the main thing I had to do was to prove that I was not a communist.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I wanted, okay? For the record.
Now, after that, did you remain involved in the Women's Council?
Well, I never was really held in office running the Women's Council, but I supported it, and I would come to their meetings, you know, and I would help them any way I possibly could. Oh, yes, very definitely.
Now, at the time of the trial, which was in October 57, you were not the recording secretary at that time, were you?
See.
Because they apparently went looking for the secretary to get the tape.
I think Lonnie Murphy was, I'm not sure, that year.
Mm-hmm. And Orville Pierce was
the president
at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And what caucus was he in?
Okay, now Orville Pierce was the caucus that I belonged to.
Mm-hmm. So your caucus was still in power.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, after recording secretary, what were the next positions that you then went into in the union days? Could you kind of trace your...
Yeah, I went back to the bargaining committee.
After recording secretary. And what... That was a decision that you...
I made.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of opposition was there to you?
I didn't have any. For quite a long time there, we were... Our caucus was in power and didn't have a whole lot of problems, really, you know. I mean, as far as caucuses within the plant, when I say no problem, it's because we had a good machine. Hey, you had a fight to keep that cotton picking machine.
Mm-hmm.
Because back in those days when the plant went up and down, we'd lose, you know, some of our people, because even though you don't have super seniority just because you're on the bargaining committee or the executive board, you do if you're a shop steward, but... We would lose some people, so we had to work like the devil to keep our machine oiled,
mm-hmm.
and keep good people in office, and work like the devil to get them elected, so we'd keep our caucus in power.
So you became more and more politically savvy.
Oh, yes. I learned the business. I learned the hard way. I sure did.
Now, during that period after you were recording secretary, that would say be about 56, 57 into there,
mm-hmm.
Then you went back to the bargaining committee.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any major strikes coming up during that period when you were back on the bargaining committee again?
No, not until, no. Mm-mm.
When was the next strike?
Well, 70. I wasn't in office then.
But during the 60s you had
no